And it is now 3 minutes past 10 o'clock. My name is Robert Barclay, the Duke of Jukes. Been in the blues for you on Sunday nights. Tonight is my 33rd anniversary broadcast. Well, I gave out my email address shortly after 9 o'clock, and I've had quite a few emails come in. I really do appreciate you taking the time. I heard from Brad out at Canadian Lakes, and he was thinking back to the spring of 1987. He was back in Michigan after 9 months in Arizona, and he was happy to find out on a Sunday drive the Juke Giant was still on the air. Thank you. I also heard from Brian in Mayville, who was obviously digging the Hound Dog Taylor I played for you earlier in the broadcast. And I heard from Robert in Houghton Lake, says congrats on 33 years, rocking as usual. And I heard from Dave in Stanton. He said his wife, Deb, is retired from the Lakeview Elementary School in Montcalm County, and we were trying to figure out how long we, meaning me, have been listening on Sunday nights. At least 20 years, he says, and I appreciate you taking the time. I also heard from Lori in North Bradley. She said she's been enjoying the show for a long time. She said her late husband, Doug, would love listening on Sunday nights, and he turned his their kids onto the blues. And the kids are out by the campfire on Geneva Road in North Bradley. So I hope they're got the radio tuned right here to the Juke Giant broadcast. I heard from John in Saginaw, enjoying the music week after week, and Cousin Rich in, I think it's Burton, where he listens. I appreciate they were taking the time to drop me a line. And I heard from Megan, and she said she and her husband were introduced to the show about a decade ago when they were traveling every weekend on I-75, and they've been loving the show ever since. Thank you so much for taking the time. Julie in Charlevoix is loving the show tonight. Congrats on 33 years, she says. And Kelly in St. John's said she loves the program. Great program tonight. She said she had never heard Little Wing by Stevie Ray Vaughan or hadn't heard it in a long time. She was happy to hear that. And she loved the story with Bernard Lansky selling cool clothes to young Elvis Presley. And I'll get to the others tonight a little later in the broadcast. Let's turn to a soundbite from a musician named Ruthie Foster. She plays guitar, piano, she sings, and she's a songwriter as well. She's from Texas originally. Saw her out at the Portland, Oregon Waterfront Blues Festival about 10 years ago. We have since brought her into the Wheatland Festival twice, and the crowd always loves her. Well, I taped an interview with her at the ARC in Ann Arbor back in 2009. Here's a soundbite from that interview. Let's go back to those times when you were singing with a blues band in biker bars. And where was that? Waco, San Antonio? Where was that?
Yeah, in Waco area, Belton, a lot of Knights of Columbus halls and throughout Waco, Bryan College Station area. Just anywhere we could. I was in a blues band, the Joe Silva Blues Band out of Waco, Texas.
Now, was this these rough biker bars, or were these well-behaved biker bars?
These guys were pretty... Well, it depends on the night and what's happening, and what's playing on the jukebox, too. You know, if somebody didn't like what was being played, then that was changed, and then the attitudes changed. But for the most part, these guys were pretty cool. They were very laid back, and I've never had a better fan base than my Harley guys. You know, they always took care of me. And, you know, this was in Waco during the early 80s, and believe it or not, some of these bars still had signs up that were... signs that they had to put up in certain places about discrimination. They still had signs up in some of these places. And so I remember Joe telling me, everything's okay, you know, don't be scared. Because, you know, this was a blues band where I was the only black person in the band. Joe was Mexican. We had a Mexican bass player. And we had a white drummer and a white saxophone player. And so these guys were just kind of crowd around me when it was time to go to the bathroom, when it was time to go for a smoke, when it was time, you know. But I really didn't need that. They were really protective of me, and we had a great time. We had great crowds that always showed up, and they were, you know, they just had a great time.
Well, that was Ruthie Foster reminiscing about her years performing in biker bars. Well, here she is in 2009. She'll play guitar on the second tune, but this first number, she's playing the Wurlitzer piano and performing a tune she wrote called Stone Love.
Try your eyes. You see, where is the V.O. ride?
That was Ruthie Foster from her CD titled The Truth, according to Ruthie Foster. And we just heard a tune that O.V. Wright made famous back in the early 70s, I think, A Nickel and a Nail. And in front of that, we heard Ruthie singing a song she wrote called Stone Love. 18 minutes past 10 o'clock, and I'm going to now spin another soundbite from an interview this time with guitarist and singer and songwriter Coco Montoya. Now, he started out on the drums, but he went out on tour with the great Albert King. But I'm going to spin a segment of the interview in which he talks about his mentor on guitar, Albert Collins. So your road tour with Albert turned into a 5-year gig?
Oh, close to. I mean, we, you know, the inconsistencies of the situation Albert was in. I mean, he'd go to Austin, you know, and he had guys back there he'd play with, you know, and he had us, and sometimes he did some shows up there with Robert and them. But, you know, yeah, it was pretty much a good 4 years, mm-hmm. you know, and took my own van out there with him. You know, I didn't mind. I was young. I didn't care. The money was, you know, was not very good. There was no record deal at that time. So I was, you know, it was pretty exciting. You're young, you're excited, you're having a good time. I made $45. I was happy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I could feed myself and, you know, get a half pint. Mm-hmm.
What did Albert Collins teach you as a musician, as a person, overall? What did you learn from him? What did you take from that experience?
That's not an easy one to answer because there's so much. He amazed me, and I look back on it now as I've gotten older and stuff, how he persevered, how he, to come from the Third Ward in Houston and have that much love in him after being treated the way he was treated, like most blacks were treated. That was an education that I don't think any non-black person could ever get that readily. I couldn't believe, I was very blessed to get that. To love me and care for me like he did. Those are really the most important things. The playing was really important and great. I wouldn't be here without him. He taught me a lot about playing and a lot about, you know, feeling this kind of music.
Well, let's turn to Coco Montoya playing an Albert Collins tune. This came out in the year 2000 on his Coco Montoya CD on Alligator called Suspicion. And we're going to listen to a tune titled Get Your Business Straight. Coco Montoya doing a cover of Albert Collins' tune, Get Your Business Straight. Well, let's turn to one more soundbite from Coco Montoya, my interview with him. And this was taped in East Lansing back in 2005. And he was reflecting on Albert Collins as Albert's health was beginning to fail him. Albert Collins lived in Las Vegas in his last years of his life, the city that B.B. King chose because B.B. King loved nightlife, and Las Vegas had it 24 hours a day. So B.B. King and Albert were both living in Vegas. But here's Coco Montoya talking about those last visits with his mentor, Albert Collins.
Because everything was what he told me when he was dying. Mm. And being there and listening to him. And I remember the last thing when I saw him, and I was going home to pay my bills and come back the next day. I said, I'm going to go home and pay a few bills. I'm going to come back. Because I've been with him a couple of days and just helping him through. And he said, all right, son. And he said, you know what, son? He said, I ain't got nothing but love in my heart for everybody on this earth. He goes, I don't have an enemy in the world. He says, you know, God knows what he wants to do with me. He said, I got nothing but love. And that's the last thing he said to me. Told me he loved me. I told him I loved him. Went home. They called me up in the middle of the night. They say he's gone. So that song will always be, you know, if you want to know how much I loved him, listen to that.
Were you there for the funeral at all? Were you on the road?
I was with him. I carried him. Me, Robert Cray, you know, we all carried him to his grave, and BB was there. It was wonderful. Jimmy Vaughn was there. You know, it was really, really, really amazing. And BB was incredible. BB spent a whole day sitting with Albert. He came over and sat and held his hand and talked with him. And he left at some late in the evening, and then Albert died in the middle of the night. But BB and him were very close. I will always respect B.B. King on a personal level. When I saw throughout the years since I've known Albert, I watched B.B., you know, come to Albert and come to his aid, come to, you know, to help him. You know, always had to. He loved Albert. I could see that right away. I could see it. And I saw BB after that. I saw him at the Tonight Show. I went down because I knew some people there, and I went down to see him. And I said, "B, it's me," you know. And he looked at me and he says, "Oh, young man, how you doing?" He said, "I said I just wanted to come and tell you it's been a while since you know Albert passed." I go, "I owe you." I said, "I'll always owe you." I said, "The way you treated my dad." I said, "BB, you are one hell of a man." And BB's always proven to me that he is one special human being on this earth. He's a great guy. That you need to know about BB King. He's tremendous.
I'm sitting, I'm choked up right now just listening to you pour out your feelings about it.
It's true. Man, see, there's a lot of love in this music. There's a lot of love in the blues, and I have a lot of love for all my friends, all the people I played for. I mean, John Mayall, God bless him. I mean, if it wasn't for John Mayall, I definitely wouldn't be here. I learned a whole lot being with John. John taught me a lot of stuff.
We'll get to those John Mayall stories on another edition of the Juke Giant broadcast. Coco was with John Mayall for quite a few years as well. In fact, he was with Mayall for 10 years. Let's turn to one more track from Albert Collins, and this is from his Grammy Award-winning CD titled Showdown. And here he is on an instrumental showing off his guitar chops, Albert's Alley. We'll be right back. to Albert's Alley, Albert Collins, on that track from 1985. Well, let's turn to another soundbite from another interview. This time, this is my first interview with Tommy Castro back in 2003. And he's got a couple of great stories. And this first one deals with how he got his start in music. You grew up in San Jose.
Yeah.
You had an older brother who played guitar. Tell me about what the music scene was like. So you're 48 this year?
Yeah, I can't believe it. What happened? I was 10 years old playing Ray's guitar, and now I'm 48, and he's actually on the road with me. I've talked him into leaving his comfortable little space in Monterey, California, where he's been for the last several years, and I said, you know what? It's about time you come out here on the road and see what you got me into. This is all your fault. And, when I was a kid, you know, Ray was the first guy in the neighborhood to pick up a guitar. And a whole bunch of guys decided to start playing after that. And I was just one of those other kids in the neighborhood that decided to be like Ray. And it was always, I was always hanging around when he was having band practice with the bands that he was in at the time, you know. It was the days of the Beatles and the Stones and the Animals and Dave Clark Five, you know, and stuff like that going on. And, oh, man, I just loved it, you know. So every time he would leave the house, I'd go out and get his really nice guitar and play it. He had a Rickenbacker guitar because, you know, the big Beatles thing going on. And I had this beat up old cowboy guitar, harmony, you know, acoustic guitar, probably the cheapest guitar you could find at the time, and it had the original strings on it. You know, I was about 10, and my little fingers were just like having a hell of a time on, you know, making chords on that. He would show me a few chords and then show me a song, you know, like House of the Rising Sun or Hey Joe or something like that. And then in exchange, I would either shine his shoes or wash his car. That's the absolute truth, man. He had this cool old black Cadillac in those days, you know, and he would send me out there, wash the car, and he'd show me a song. And so that's how it all got started, you know, and then I...
I suspect there's a number of musicians out there that had older brothers or sisters that... showed them some licks on the guitar or on the piano or on the drums, and you had to shine their shoes or go wash their car. I love that story from Tommy Castro. We'll hear his story about John Lee Hooker here in a moment. Let's turn to something from Tommy Castro. This is from his latest release. It came out late last year. It's on Alligator. It's called Stomping Ground. And here is a tune where he sings a duet with Danielle Nicole on a tune titled Soul Shake. And that was Tommy Castro on Soul Shake, singing with Danielle Nicole in the studio. And we're going to return to another soundbite from Tommy Castro talking about his chance to visit with John Lee Hooker at his home shortly before he passed away. But I've got a couple of messages I need to play for you first. Well, now let's return to another soundbite from Tommy Castro. He had the opportunity to visit John Lee Hooker at Hooker's home south of San Francisco, and here he tells what it was like to go over and visit this sharp-dressed blues man, John Lee Hooker.
We go to his house, and he's sitting on the couch in his full blues uniform. He's got the hat, man. I've never seen him without that hat and a suit jacket on, you know, and a nice silk shirt, you know. And he might be a little disheveled, you know. He might be sitting in his house on the couch watching a ball game, drinking light beer, yeah, you know. And he just ate and stuff, and he was just sitting there, just real comfortable. But he's got all the stuff on. He's got thick and thins. He's wearing some sharp Stacy Adams shoes. I mean, he's got really, you know, just looking sharp. And I just said, man, this is way too cool. And Johnny Ace, who writes for Big City Blues Magazine, by the way, you might be familiar with him. He played bass for John Lee for some years back in the 70s, I think. And Johnny came along to take some pictures, which are on our website. And so they go way back, and they sat around. They talked about old times, and John Lee was joking and laughing. He was in really a great mood, you know. And I remember one thing that he said that really tickled me, you know. He was talking about having so many wives and stuff like that, and women in his life, and I said, yeah, I said, you know what Johnny Taylor said, man? I said, it's cheaper to keep her. Don't tell Calvary I said that. He's telling Johnny Ace. It was a joke. People, it was a joke. John Lee, and his face lit up, man. He cracked up because we fell out, you know. And then we went on, we finally got around to recording this thing, and here I am sitting on one end of the couch with headphones on. He's sitting on the other end of the couch with headphones on. And I'm just, you know, I'm having the time of my life. I'm thinking, how did this happen to me? How in the world did this ever happen to me? A week later, he passed away in his sleep. And, well, you know, it was a huge... It was a big success story, as good as a one as I've ever heard. You know, he's in his middle 80s. He's got money in the bank. He's playing music right up until the last week of his life. The next night he went out and did a live show, and everybody told me, well, what a great show it was. He was tearing it up, walking around, stomping around, growling. You know, he may have known. I think his spirit knew that this may be his last show, and he really put on a hell of a show that night. And, you know, he had people that loved him. He had been in good, from going to the service, you know, sound like that his relationship with his children and his family was all right, you know, and he passed away in his sleep in his own bed, never did to hang around the hospital, didn't have to go through some of the things that some people do. He didn't die broke. He got what he had deserved, you know, had lots of cars in the garage, man. It was really cool, big diamond rings. That's as good as it gets, man. I won't be just like John Lee Hooker when I grow up.
That's right. I want to be just like John Lee Hooker when I grow up. Well, here is John Lee Hooker in the early years on a couple of tunes he made famous. We're going to start with John L.'s House Rent Boogie.
Friday, tell that I want to lose my job. Now that don't confront me. Now so I have my rent next Friday. And next Friday come, I didn't have the rent, and out the door I went. Y'all, right across the street here. Help me get this rent together. Some give me a nickel, and some give me a dime. Well, I'm tired of seeing this movie every night. I can't hold out much longer. Now I got this rent. Now let's get together, y'all. Let's have a ball.
One bourbon, one scotch, and one beer. John Lee Hooker from 1966. Prior to that, from 1950, we heard about the house rent, John L.'s house rent boogie. Let's turn to one more soundbite from Bruce Iglauer talking about the lunch truck that pulled up outside of Florence's, where Hound Dog Taylor had his gigs on the south side of Chicago. Tell us about the delicacy that was served right outside of Florence's on Sunday afternoon.
There was a truck, like a lunch wagon kind of truck, that would pull up outside of Florence's every Sunday selling pig ear sandwiches. And I've got to be honest, I never had the nerve to try one, but plenty of other people did. There was also, Florence's would sell packaged goods, you know, bottles. So there were lots and lots of people who would get a half a pint in a paper bag and stand outside and drink that rather than drink shots at the bar. And there was always a dice game going on the street, often involving Magic Slim, who was a pretty unknown musician at that time, and not really a very good one at that time. There was no admission charge, and people were sometimes in their church clothes. They would have come directly from church, or sometimes in work clothes. You'd see guys, you know, with the overalls from the coveralls from the garage, with their name, you know, on the pocket. And sometimes they'd get up and play, and they'd be really good. You know? And musicians came and hung out there all the time. You know, Lefty Diz was there. Sun Seal started to hang out there when he moved to Chicago. People you've never heard of, like Baby Duck and Little Mac Neal. Left Hand Frank was there all the time. So it was a kind of a musician's free-for-all. And by the way, when people left Florence's, when the music ended about 6, then the same crowd would go usually down to what was it called? We just called it by the address, 69th and South Park, where the Aces were playing. And they'd stay there for a couple hours. And then we'd go to Josephine's, where Magic Slim was playing. And the same people would be in each club, drunker and drunker, dancing until they passed out. And everybody had a great time. Yeah.
shaker. Shake your money maker. Honey, you read all right.
Baby, don't go yet. It's only 11:45.
Support for WCMU comes from the Michigan DNR. Arbor Day on April 27th this year was started by J. Sterling Morton in 1854. A Michigander who had moved to the Nebraska Territory, he encouraged others to plant trees for windbreaks and shade. More about Arbor Day in Michigan is available at michigan.gov/UCF. I want to thank my listeners who dropped me a line tonight. Heard from Councilman Joe up in Gaylord, heard from Ray in Madison, Wisconsin, Richard in Redmond, Oregon, John in Saginaw, Robin in Eugene, Oregon, Marva from Wolverine, Keith in Millington, and who else did I hear from? Oh, I heard from John and Marcy up at the Old Mission General Store on the Old Mission Peninsula north of Traverse City. And Robin, and heard from Robin, and I appreciate that as well. I'll be back in this spot with another 3 hours of the blues next Sunday night, and until then, this is Robert Barclay, and I'll see you on the flip side.